Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Ryder. Little Joey Ryder, how you doing today?
Congratulations, Corey, on reaching puberty. I'm just judging by the way your voice keeps cracking at the beginning of every episode.
Well, maybe I'm Peter Brady.
You never had the hair for it.
When it's time to change, you've got to rearrange.
We'll get rid of them.
I'm probably the only person with a podcast with the longest running. What is it? What is it they say on Raw, Joe?
Chest hair?
No, the longest running.
You want to just punch
me? Episodic comic book podcast.
Oh, that.
The longest running episodic comic book podcast in the history of the known universe. I'm probably the only person with a comic book podcast who also owns the Brady Bunch CD.
And what I didn't realize is that the Brady Bunch Variety Hour was done by Sid and Marty Croft.
Of course it was.
No, I did not realize that. I just finished reading a book about all the stuff from Puffin Stuff all the way to Pink. And that was it. Don't you remember that one?
Wasn't it Pink Lady and Jeff?
It might have been. I don't remember. I don't even. That's the one of the few I don't actually recall.
Oh, I do. Oh, my God. It was a horrible piece of crap.
Oh.
Pink Lady couldn't speak any English at all. So everything they did was phonetic. And then they had Jeff Altman, who was a decent comedian. And the only reason I can continue to remember that show, Mark Evanier wrote for it. And every so often in GRU, he would make jokes about it.
Another reason to read GRU.
Yes. Let's see, Donnie and Marie, I believe, was Sid and Marty Croft. Yep, why, yep. Yes, it was.
It was.
The Donnie and Marie variety show. They pretty much had the lock on all the variety shows in the 70s.
Yeah.
Hey, does that mean they did the Star Wars Holiday Special?
No, that one.
Damn it.
From them. And I know for a fact if they had had their fingers in it, it probably would have turned out a lot better than it did.
And there would have been more puppets.
True. I have this ongoing fan fiction in my brain where I want to start out with the Lost Saucer and have it, since it can go through time and space, have it go through all the episodes of Sid and Marty Croft and save everybody who's been abandoned. You know, Kid in Lidsville, the Billy and Puffin Stuff.
We could just stop with Lidsville. Lidsville was the best in Marty Croft show.
I mean, we'd have to save.
End of statement.
We'd have to save the people on Dr. Shrinker. But see, what I want to do is I want to bring it in because when you stop and you think about it, some of the villains in Puffin Stuff are really, I mean, beyond their normal bumblingness. If they ever got coordinated, they were pretty kick-ass powerful. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the Puffin Stuff movie.
No.
At the very end of it, and this is a spoiler alert if you want to fire one off.
Okay. Spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie.
Yep, that I didn't even realize was a movie. But what happened at the end of it, Billy, with his magic flute, found the path to get him back home. And Witchy Poo, in an utter wanton act of mass destruction, utterly destroyed it, the entire landscape. I mean, and it was basically a wasteland that there was no way he would ever be able to find the path home. And it was just one of those things that, you know, in the movie, it was pretty badass. But then, of course, she was such a bumbler in the TV show. I was kind of like, is this the same person who, like, did like a Hiroshima on a landscape. But you take her, you take Dr. Shrinker and his ray, you take some of the villains from Electra Woman, Diana Girl, you take, I don't know what Charles Nelson Reilly's character was in Lidville. But if they were all to band up together against their nemesis, it would be quite a posse there of power.
It might even cause a crisis.
It could. But look who you'd have up against them. I mean, you'd have Wonder Car and Electra Woman, Diana Girl, and Billy and Bigfoot. Or what was it? Wild and Bigfoot. I forget what the name of that show was. By that time, I was done. But
I think we're done now.
The only thing that stopped me from writing this is I had a tough time deciding, do I want to have Captain Cool and the Kong or the Bay City Rollers as musical guests?
Oh, dear God.
I just can't do it. And, you know, that, of course, ties into my Land of the Lost stuff, which, I mean, for a kid's show, Land of the Lost was pretty kick-ass, at least until the third season. So that's my when I get bored, I just fan fiction that baby out. And really, if you want to come talk to me about it, I'll be at the MCBA Spring Con Comic Book Celebration, May 19th to 20th, 2012, at the Minnesota State Fair Grandstand.
And if you want to talk to him about it, I want video evidence that you actually discussed it rather than going up to Joe and going, you're just nuts.
Well, see, I don't think that's really a problem because for the past 2 years, nobody, and I mean nobody, has come up to me and talked to me about the podcast. I know they've talked to you about it.
You know why that is?
Because I try not to stay around the charity booth too much.
Because you're talking about H.R. Puffin stuff.
No. I started out with The Lost Saucer. That was Ruth Buzzy and Jim Neighbors. She's on Sesame Street now, you know.
Jim Neighbors?
He was on Sesame Street. He got to sing the ABCs with that rich voice of his Shazam.
Is he still alive?
I lost track of him and Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda is still alive. I check every day.
Yeah, it's good to have a website for that.
Believe it or not, kids.
And most
this show has sponsors.
Lies.
And they're probably fleeing for the hills as we speak.
The hills have eyes.
This web series, podcast, whatever, is brought to you by DreamHost.com.
It is.
It's hosted on DreamHost.com.
Well, that's an amazing coincidence.
DreamHost.com is a web host. You can set up your own website. You can have your Facebook and your MySpace and your Friendster and your Twitter and your Google Plus and your Yelp and your Foursquare and all of them. But if you don't have a website, just doesn't matter. Go to DreamHost.com and get one. And if you use the code CRAZY, you get $20 off the first year.
Cool.
Believe it or not.
And, of course, our website is www.crazycomics@solitairerose.com.
Part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites.
And if you just don't feel clean going there, you can always visit our official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page. And I'm sure if you
see, here's the thing. You always call it comics and stuff, and I call it comics and stories. I don't know where you get comics and stuff.
Is that what comics? That's what I named the podcast page.
Because it's comics and stories because of Walt Disney's comics and stories.
Yeah, the only problem is I don't know if I can change that on Facebook.
You kids today.
I know.
With your big hair and
Sucker
loud.
Man!
And what Joe told me before we started
mm-hmm.
was that we're jumping right into Tales from the Shop. And Tales from the Shop is brought to us by Chris B. at BroomhildaMusic.com. Just go to BroomhildaMusic.com, click on the picture, and it's got the album, It Was You, available for purchase. And down at the bottom, there's like a little media player, and you can play it, and you can hear some of the music, just like our theme. We'll be right back. Then when you go there, you also, you'll see on the right-hand side of the page where it says get updates, join the email list to keep up with the happenings at Broomhildaland. You put your email in there, you click, you'll get emails about when her next gigs are. She is performing a lot at the Ginkgo Copy House in St. Paul, where there's going to be a whole lot of change going on in St. Paul. We'll talk about that a little later.
Happy Squirrel Appreciation Day.
I don't like squirrels. They're like rats with big fluffy tails.
You're just mad because one ran up your leg going for your nuts.
I'm just mad that they show that when I worked downtown and I would eat outside, the little bastards were ballsy. They'd come right up and stare at you.
And they look at you like, why haven't you fed me?
Yes. And they're like a foot away. And all I could think is, you're darn lucky that I didn't spend as much time in Central Illinois as many people, or you'd be dinner. So, Joe.
Yes, sir.
Tales from the Shop. Folks, I have no idea what he's going to discuss.
Nope.
You're surprising me.
It's always interesting when I look back to me and look at the little things that fell into place in order for me to eventually own a comic store. I actually own two. And, you know, some of it was, you know, like my mom when I was at Sears. Now you're talking, this was like 79. I started working in Sears catalog. And they had this thing called profit sharing. Now I was 16 and I had no idea what it was. And my mom said, oh, sign up for it. Why? Well, it's like savings account, you know, and then you don't have to worry about trying to save money. That money that I saved at 10 years at Sears worked towards getting me my first comic shop. And it was kind of like one of those inadvertent things that, you know, because my mom said sign it up or sign up for it, I didn't realize, you know, 10 years later, it would just tie into that. Call it God, call it Hand of Fate, call it Chitulu wanting a sandwich, whatever it is. It just, all these things fell into place. This past week, somebody passed away. My next door neighbor, her name was Lois McClellan. And my mom told me this story a number of years ago, but I did not realize she too also played a part of me having eventually owned a comic book shop. So it starts out, I think I was working at a place called House of Wong. It was in Roseville, Minnesota. It's still there. And it amazes me because I was working like 2 days a week, making $30. And, you know, no taxes were taken out because it was such a low paycheck. You know, I mean, I got Social Security taken out. And that $30, I would go to Dreamhaven Books in Dinkytown. Actually, it wasn't in Dinkytown yet. But I would go there, and I would spend it on comic books. And I swear, I brought home thousands of comic books because, you know, they were all like 25 cents a piece. So I'd be doing this. I'm spending my money. I'm bringing home comics. I'm reading them. Well, apparently my parents weren't exactly thrilled with this. Now, if you recall back in the 50s, what was that shuckster's name? Seduction of the Innocent.
Frederick Wortham.
Thank you. Apparently my parents subscribed to that theory. You know, they had no idea why. They just, you know, it was one of those things that, oh, I heard comic books were bad, blah, blah, blah. You know, my dad would be, oh, I know a guy who spent all his money on comic books, ruined his marriage, lost his house, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever. Tales from the Biff. You know, you're sitting on the outdoor crapper making up this crap. Apparently distraught one day, my mom talked to Lois McClellan, again, our next door neighbor. And this could have been a verifiable, you know, thing from better, you know, home improvement. You know, we literally had a fence with shrubs and you could talk right over it. She told my mother, as long as he's reading, she shouldn't worry about it. And my mom basically never really bothered me about it again. My dad always gave me a little bit of grief here and there, especially as the collection kept growing. Although my ma did tell me once that he did express an admiration about how I kept them in order, you know, by title, by number, bagged and boarded, individual, blah, blah, blah. So Lois passed away this last week. She was 92. Her and her husband, Ed, who passed away earlier, were the epitome of the best neighbors ever possible. And we just stop and give a quick kudos to her, because without her, I'm pretty sure my comic history collecting would have gone a lot differently. I think it would have been a lot harder to buy things if your parents were constantly on your case about them.
And maybe instead of collecting comics, you would have collected crack and hookers.
It could have happened. I do recall, you know, sneaking a cigarette outside the garage out back.
Well, that's how it all starts.
Just thinking it smelled like, you know, if I had licked the dog's behind, so I just never smoked another one. That is almost an origin of the comic shop, just the very beginning, you know.
The secret origin of course, Hot Comics 8 Paul / Crazy Comics.
The big one, of course, was, you know, my cousin Jerry, who gave me my first comic book, and we've talked about the origin of that in earlier podcasts. Spidey 178. Still got it. I got it slabbed a number of years ago, and I think it got like a 4 or something, 5.8 or something. I read the bejesus out of it.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the thing. I remember the comics I read as a kid. I read everything. I read the Indicta at the bottom. I read every word of every ad. I studied the bullpen bulletins page, all that stuff.
And, of course, do you have the sad music queued up?
Uh-oh.
As we leave Tales from the Shop.
We go to Tales from Another Shop?
No, we just have some sad news.
Uh-oh. Sad news, everyone!
Despite all the ads, Hostess is bankrupt. Do you think it's because they stopped running all those Hostess ads, the offbeat staples of the 70s and 80s?
Actually, I read up on this. It's the cost of flour and sugar going up. And they have not raised their prices because they've got intense competition from Little Debbie's and all the local bakeries.
They own Dolly Madison.
Yeah, but they don't own Little Debbie.
Oh, that's right. Little Debbie always. I'm sorry. Little Debbie chocolate swirls are inferior to Hole's. That's just it. But Little Debbie also puts out those wonderful crispy chocolate cracker or chocolate crisp things. Oh, look, I'm drooling. I'm drooling already.
And they did not raise their prices. In fact, they've lowered prices. If you go to the grocery store, there's a Hostess set up usually in the frozen food display. I have no idea why they put it near frozen foods.
Well, if you freeze them, they actually, they chew a little better.
But they've got, you know, here's the pies and the this and the ho-hos and everything, and they're 10 for a dollar. Meanwhile, at the grocery store, I mean, at the gas station, I think they're like $1.50.
And which is weird because you go down and, you know, I don't know if these are all over, but we've got the Hostess or Wonder surplus stores or whatever they call them.
Yeah, you had one by the shop.
Yeah, you get like two boxes of Hostess cream-filled cupcakes for $4. And sometimes they run at 3 for $5, you know, as opposed to running to like the grocery store and buying a whole box for $3. Or like I did when I was up in the Arctic, buying them for $8.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. The one down by your shop on White Bear Avenue, I would stop there every couple of weeks, and it just seemed sad. The employee looked depressed. The shelves, it's not like they did a lot of merchandising or anything. It was just, here you go. Stuff was just thrown on. They had day-old bread and stuff like that, but those stores just, they kind of, you walk out and you just want to sigh.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot find when they bought Dolly Madison, but it had to be within the last 10 years or so.
Yeah. I remember when that happened because, of course, Dolly Madison was the big thing advertised during the Peanuts specials. And, of course, you'd never find Dolly Madison anywhere, at least not until Hostess bought them.
By the way, speaking of Peanuts, Did you pick up the Peanuts comic, Joe?
Yes, I did. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
That was the thing. I picked it up and I said, well, you know, I'll like the reprints of the Sunday strips, but the rest is just going to suck. And it didn't.
No, they're doing a really good job of making new stories. Certainly better than when they were doing them in the Gold Key.
Yeah. Although the ones in the Gold Key, those actually went by Schultz. The guy who drew it shared studio space with Schultz. And, you know, Charles Schultz was very, very adamant that he didn't want anybody else to draw his characters. But for the comic book, he's the one who chose the artist. He's the one, and he had the artist in his studio so that he could approve everything. But still, those were pretty bland. And the ones that they did in this comic by Boom, I was really impressed with. So while we're talking about stuff we like, that new segment, Joe, that new segment, Geeking and Freaking, is brought to us by BarkCop.com. BarkCop is a political humor website that goes into tequila and poker and politics. It's got a bunch of political cartoons. It's got opinions. It's got letters. It's got people who write him letters who disagree with him, and he smacks them around like they're Dr. Octopus in a mid-70s Spider-Man comic. And here's BarkCop's ad.
Hi, my name's Bart, and I got a little radio show over at BartCop.com that we call it the Tequila Treehouse. And on the radio show, we talk about a lot of things. You know, we talk about sports, and we talk about sex, and we talk about TV, and we talk about movies. But really, we're not talking about those things. We're usually talking about the politics of the sports and the sex and the TV and the movies and that. So if you go to BartCop.com, you might get to hear a sample. Actually, the radio show is for the subscribers, but now and then we open it up to the general masses, or we play some snippets on there trying to tease you into subscribing. But that's over at BartCop.com, the Tequila Treehouse. Try it. You might like it.
So, geeking and freaking. Geeking. One of the things I am geeking out about, I am getting very excited for the Avengers X-Men crossover. They're showing the covers, and the covers look cool. They're doing a good job of kind of, they're not telling you everything. I think one of the reasons why people didn't like Fear Itself is they pretty much told you the whole story before the first issue came out. This one, if they're asking, well, which side of Wolverine be on? Instead of explaining it in god-awful detail, they're just going, wait and see, wait and see, wait and see. So I'm really excited about that. They say it's going to be spinning out of Children's Crusade, so I'm going to have to pick that up when they do a trade of it.
I better write that down. Children's Crusade.
Yep. Freaking. What am I freaking about? I'm freaking about my TiVo. Because it's getting full. There are too many good shows on TV now, Joe.
What they need to do is be, you know, have it so you could, like, link to your TiVo from your laptop.
Oh, you can, but it costs money.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, since you got to be up overnight at the group home, that might be a good time for you to catch up on stuff.
That's a problem. The group home has no internet.
Can you do it through? Oh, see, that's why I would thought you'd do it through the phone line, but apparently not.
Nope. Group home doesn't have internet, which makes it a little harder to do the overnights. But at the group home, I'm watching I bought all four seasons of Mad Men last year. And I'm just about done with season two. And great, great show. I'm loving it. Loving it, loving it. The redhead on it is amazing. And the writing is really good, too. I really enjoyed that show. But look at all the great shows. Justified started up again. Alcatraz, which is a J.J. Abrams show.
I got that on TiVo. My version, which is just a DVR.
All the CSI shows are back. Jamie Oliver is doing a series where he's going across America to learn about American food on BBC. The Fade on BBC America. Let's see.
And of course, I like Royal Pains. I know you're not as big a fan on that one, but I like that.
No, I didn't get hooked on it. Kevin Smith's Comic Book Men starts in less than a month. Walking Dead starts back up in less than a month.
There was a show at my wife tried to record, but the problem was is we had a conflict on the DVR, some other things being recorded. It was a I think it's called Toy Geeks. And much like American Pickers and some of these other shows where guys are like buying the remains of storage bins and seeing what they can get out of it, these guys are going across America picking out toys. And I'll have to go look for it because I know she we're going to try to record it or maybe catch it later at night. So, yeah, there's all sorts of gooey stuff up.
Yeah, the overnights at the group home, I'm, you know, doing some digital comics. I'm reading those. I'm bringing trade paperbacks. What it is, I got a big, you know, the bags you buy at Target, the big kind of cloth bags.
Mm-hmm.
Filled up one of them with trade paperbacks from the trade paperback room. And I just keep that in the car. And when I get one read, I read the next one. Although, boy, Thursday night, I didn't want to go outside to get one. So I just watched about 4 episodes of Mad Men in a row because it was like 17 below.
Yeah, it was snowing. No, Wednesday it was snowing, wasn't it?
Yep. Ugh. And here's my other problem with the overnights. What I've been told, well, you know, you're working Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday off. You don't have to be in until Sunday night. Nope, Friday I had to be there first thing in the morning. Today I was there, and I'll have to go back later tonight. And then tomorrow I'm in at 8:30. Yes, the overtime is nice, but oh, my God. When do I sleep?
Sleep is for wusses.
Yes. So, Joe, what are you geeking and freaking about?
Right now, I am geeking because my daughter, my oldest daughter who come home from college, is going through a renaissance in comics. It's all started because, you know, she's just utterly, utterly in love with Grant Morrison and his writing.
Good for her. And she's a smart girl.
She's mad. I've got her copy of Super Gods that I gave her for Christmas, and I'm slowly working my way through it. And of course, as I work through Super Gods, you know, I just got to the point where he talked about The Dark Knight. So I pulled out my Dark Knight book with, I had the Frank Miller Best Of book.
Oh, yeah.
And I got it cheap for like $5 because this one had water damage on it, but it reads fine. So I read that through, you know, and that was Batman Year One, the Miller story Wanted, Santa Claus Dead or Alive, and of course, The Dark Knight Returns. I've got to reread the next Dark Knight book, and I'm either going to bust open my Absolute Dark Knight or just dig up the original ones. But as she's reading, she's getting into Grant Morrison. She's got We Three. She started the first Justice League book and enjoyed that. I got to dig up. I know I have copies of the Doom Patrol. I don't have copies of Animal Man. I got to pick up.
Thing about Animal Man, they've got the whole run in 3 trade paperbacks.
Oh, I'll write that down. 3 trades of Animal Man. Gonna take a little overtime, but I can do it. I have.
Yeah, here's the thing. I recommend so many things. Why aren't these comic shops giving me a kickback so I can afford funny books?
I know I got the Grant Morrison X-Men.
Damn them all.
And of course, as you're reading through his book, you know, he talks about different things and, you know, things that I got to dig up. Some of it I'll have to look for, especially things that he did or he's recommending that were only overseas. Some things he recommended, like Tank Girl, you know, I remember selling it, but I don't ever remember reading it. And he's even like, well, the original Tank Girl was good. The second one I enjoyed, but the goth girls who enjoyed the first one didn't like the second, you know. So really, it's kind of fun. As we're going through it, you know, I keep recommending to Dana different things. You know, I told her to read Kingdom Come. And I told her, you got to watch out in the background. She said, why? So I flipped open the book to where the Monkey Men were standing. You know, it's a group of heroes right before all hell broke loose. So it's just been fun. What occurred to me, and some other people have been talking about this, and I think Grant Morrison talks about it. It seems to me there's a lot more standalone DC books that I could give someone to get them excited about comics than there are Marvel. You know, I mean, there's a few bits like Marvel's, but most everything else in Marvel seems to be, you know, it ties into this, which ties into that, which ties into this, or it's older classical stuff that you know, she might get into. I mean, eventually I keep telling her, you know, you got to go look at the works of Kirby. Why? Because he basically invented pretty much everything you're reading now.
And Grant Morrison, really, in a lot of his stories, he's channeling that Kirby, you know what, just take a bunch of ideas and throw it at the wall and see what you go with. Marvel actually, their trade paperback sales and hardcover, you know, all the book sales from last year are in. And Marvel didn't have a whole lot in the top 100. And as I look through, I'm going to be doing a special probably within 2-3 weeks because I'm writing notes in my overnights. Who knows, Joe? Maybe you'll be on that episode.
True, true.
Marvel doesn't have a lot of books in the top 100 sales for the year. And the reason is the books that really do well on those charts are the evergreens. Watchmen, Dark Knight, Kingdom Come, Walking Dead, you know, Batman Year One, all that stuff. Because it sells month after month after month after month after month. And Marvel treats their trade paperbacks and hardcovers pretty much the same way they treat their comics.
Now, print them, let them run out.
They're even to the point now with the Perlmutter stuff where they don't keep inventory anymore. And that was their problem when they were in bankruptcy. DC wasn't selling as many comics. You know, there was about a 7 to 8 point difference. But DC was just destroying them when it came to paperbacks. So at the end of the year, DC overall sales were about double that of Marvel. It's getting to that point again, even with the DC 52 dropping to the point where Marvel's back in the lead. Marvel still sells more comics a month than DC again. But DC, their trades just keep, they keep them in print. Yeah. They keep
their
archives. They
figured out how to make money at it. Marvel.
Yeah.
Again, we talked about it a couple podcasts ago where they just, Marvel doesn't care. They're in a cross-cutting mode. Disney doesn't care because Marvel keeps giving them money, you know, which is good for someone that you paid $4 billion for. But they're not looking to build the retail business. And I think Disney will probably support them on this because Disney took a bath on their Disney stores. Heck, they couldn't even get their downtown Disney to work properly. So they're less inclined to look at the retail side of thing and more to just, well, just publish it, sell it, and let's move on to the next thing rather than keep things in stock perpetually.
Well, and
which
Disney
is too
makes
bad for us.
Disney makes their money on TV and movies. I don't think we as comic fans understand how much money is generated in television. I don't think we get it because I've read a lot more on why Disney bought Marvel. Disney could not give less of a shit about Marvel's publishing. They don't care. Could not care less. The Iron Man movie made $1 billion. That's what they care about.
And that could be a plus for Marvel. Like I said, as long as they cough up money every quarter, it's not like...
I think it's more as long as they don't lose money.
Yeah.
Because they're R&D at this point.
Yeah.
Disney looked over their portfolio and said, you know what? We don't have anything to appeal to boys age 8 to 14. So they started a new channel, Disney XD. They bought some anime. You know, they've got some other stuff. But they're pretty much aiming, this is going to be Marvel. I think it's within the next few months when the Ultimate Spider-Man series starts, they're going to have a Marvel block. And it would not surprise me if that Marvel animation block continues to grow.
And it's actually fun. I talked about that too because I watched some of the episodes and I read some of the books. They're not bogged down with 40, 50, 60 years of continuity. Everything's fresh. I mean, Hulk is still a dangerous being, but he will fight. He'd just as soon smack Iron Man or Thor down as he would the villain. Just so happens the villain's a bigger pain. So it's real interesting just to watch. And I think they've got him out on DVD, if I'm not mistaken. I might pick him up that way. They might even be on Netflix. I don't even know. I'll have to
Netflix
look.
Has become my best friend.
Yeah.
So
what's the other half of this thing we're doing? Geeks and what?
Geeking and freaking. What are you freaking about? What
I am freaking that I did not have $40,700 to buy a 1966 Pontiac Monkey car replica. They just sold one at the Bartle Jackson's World Greatest Car Collector Car Auction, and the thing is beautiful. It even was signed by three of the monkeys, the three that still run around, monkey around. And if I had $40,000, I probably would have bought this baby myself. And I have to stop and think, I must have done something wrong with my life if I can't afford a $40,000 monkey mobile.
Well, I think there's one thing we're both going to be freaking about.
What's that?
And I'm bringing that up now. And that is, I'm just going to read it here.
Wait, I have to do a shout out.
Okay.
Now, you guys know I'm on eBay under the label Crazy, right? K-R-A-Y-Z.
You are?
Well, for people who are listening, they know. Because they can go look up, and anything that I'm auctioning off, if they mention they hear it on the podcast, they can get it for free. But my old partner, Pat, he's also on eBay. And I will do this in a way that you folks will always remember him on eBay. Khan! His handle is Khan, K-H-A-N dash 53. He too is blowing out a bunch of stuff on eBay. I mention this because I just picked up from him the Omnibus Secret Wars, $100 book.
He started it
at $35. I don't have a copy of Secret Wars anywhere. So for $35 to get a $100 hardcover, it's a pretty sweet deal.
I suppose.
So, but right now I'm just looking. He's got, and of course I mentioned this because by the time the podcast is out, it's gone, but he's putting on a bunch of statues. He's got a Savage She-Hulk, the Marvel Bowen Jean Grey statue when she was Marvel Girl. He also has a George Perez original Wolverine commission sketch. And so check him out, Khan-3153. And then, of course, you can always check me out, Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. And if you mention you heard it on the podcast, I'll ship it to you for free. Even if it's one of the 99-cent variants I'm trying to blow out of. That's the way I roll.
Well, more sad news, everyone.
Oh.
Dreamhaven, run by Greg Ketter, who's a damn handsome man.
Damn handsome. Fine, fine man. I would not kick him out of bed for eating crackers. Well, unless he got crumbs on the pillow.
Will no longer have regular store hours.
What?
Yep. He will have special events.
Say that again. I wasn't convincing enough.
He will no longer have regular store hours.
What? Is that better?
That's better.
Okay, thank you.
He will no longer have regular store hours. What he'll do, he'll be having special events and mail order. But he doesn't want to run the store anymore. And if you go to the Dreamhaven website at dreamhaven.com, you can read through his blog. And you can kind of see the mounting frustration of, you know, coming into the store, not having many customers, spending the day packing stuff for mail out, and having shoplifters take stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, he owns that building. The mail order business does very, very well. He's still friends with tons of authors. So what he's,
of course, is Neil Gaiman.
So what he's going to do is, he'll continue to go to conventions, he'll continue to do mail order, and he will open the store for special events, which he'll be announcing soon. But there will be a party on Saturday, January 28th at 7 p.m. to celebrate the last 35 years of Dreamhaven and its different incarnations. I'm sorry. They will have food, drink, conversations, and I've heard there may be music.
Although I've been to the store, I have no idea where he's going to set up music. I mean, his store is basically top to bottom, left to
well,
right.
Well, I would imagine that he's not going to be carrying Kurt comics anymore.
Yeah.
I imagine he'll be sending back a lot of books that there aren't a lot of call for. But we'll see what we see. I'm going. I made sure to make sure that I have that night off. I'm going to be going to this. I don't care if I'm sick, if I've been hit by a banana truck, if Joe doesn't show up. Don't care. I'm going.
Don't care. I think I'm going to try to go, too. I should have the day off, so. I know I have the day off. Wait a minute. The 28th. Yep, Saturday. So I will be off work, so I will attempt to go.
Joe has stories about Dreamhaven, but I have a couple stories about Dreamhaven.
Dreamhaven stories.
When I first moved here, I knew nothing about the local comic shops. Nothing at all. And I worked at Schinder's, so I started finding out about these different places. The first time I went to Dreamhaven was for a signing. A Dave Sims signing.
I think I was.
I think
too.
We've talked about it here. Yeah. Joe and I went, and I didn't know Joe very well either. But one of our mutual friends said, "Oh, come on, let's go." So I went with him. Joe met us there, and I don't know how long we were in line. It seems like we were in line forever. But this was the store down in Dinkytown, and the line went out the door and all the way around, and they had that store. And then they had two stores in Uptown. And after the comic book bust, they went down to two stores in Uptown. And then a little while later, they just went to the one main store. And I would go there about every 6 months to pick up used paperbacks and dig through their back issue comics, because they stole my idea that I gave to Joe of doing comic packs. And for the longest time, their comic packs were priced crazy high. They would basically take, oh, this is six issues, and the back issue price of them is $4 each. So it's a $24 pack. Meanwhile, you know, it's been sitting there for 7 years. The comic wasn't worth $4 anymore, but they didn't change the prices. Then about, oh, I think it was 2002, 2003, they must have gotten somebody who said, let's blow this inventory out, because the prices on the packs went down to much, much less. Usually it's, okay, here's 20 issues in a row. It's $19.95. Just get it out of here. We don't want it. But there were a number of employees who had been with Greg for years and years and years. And when he changed his store model, he moved from the store in Uptown to the store he's at now. He had to let go of all the employees. Some of them have found employment at other bookstores. So if you go to Uncle Hugo's, you'll see a couple Dreamhaven employees, things like that. But I always enjoyed going there because, like Joe has talked about with his shop, there's always weird stuff that you never saw anyplace else. He had boxes of old movie monster magazines, like cult movies and scary monsters and famous monsters of filmland. He had every Doctor Who novel, just a monstrous rack of them. He had tons and tons and tons of used books. He had, at least at one point, he had all of the big EC collections. And he was the first one I went to after I completed my collection, where I looked on the wall and I went, ooh, he's selling that for $600. I bought it for $100. A lot of old collectible science fiction paperbacks. And those were kind of tempting because you'd look at them and go, wow, that's out of print and I never got to read it. But $52 for a paperback book is just too much. But I would go at least twice a year and get a grocery bag full of used books. And then I would spend either the summer or the winter reading them and then give them away to people when I was done reading them and go back and do it again. So I'm going to miss being able to do that. The shop was always very, very supportive of the local community as well. They had Neil Gaiman signings when nobody knew who he was.
Oh, yeah. I remember going in there, and that's I posted it online where I actually – we're all standing in line, and I hand Neil my sketchbook expecting just a signature, and he draws a picture of Morpheus. And everybody's amazed, and they're like, we didn't know you could draw. He goes, yeah, I like to just draw for fun. And why don't you draw an issue of Sandman? Oh, no, no, no. And he also talks about, or at the time he said, that's sometimes how he would storyboard things out, you know, for the artists, you know, because he could actually do a fairly decent drawing.
And I'm sure Joe will talk about it a little more when he talks about his memories of Dreamhaven. But the other thing was, Dreamhaven actually was the first people who published Neil Gaiman's prose. They did a hardcover book called, I think it's Angels and Visitations. I still have my copy.
Yeah, I've got it.
And, you know, here's Neil Gaiman. He's known for this comic book, Sandman, and a book about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And Greg Ketter just contacts him out of the blue, says, hey, I really like Sandman. Do you have anything that I could publish? And Neil sent him a whole bunch of poems and short stories and stuff and put it out as a book. And really, that book is what got Neil Gaiman the attention of the bigger publishers. So it was after that that he got American Gods and Asani Boys and all that stuff. Which is why he will still work with Greg Ketter. And you go in there, Ketter's got everything Neil Gaiman's done, and most of it is signed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some other science fiction authors that Ketter worked with and published, like, folios of their stuff or things like that. So it's sad that he's closing the store for the reason he's closing it. He's not closing it because sales are down. He's closing it because there's just so much shoplifting that he's very frustrated about that, and he's losing money from shoplifting to the point where there are some days where one person shoplifts one thing and there goes all his profits for the week so far. Joe?
Well, sit back, son, because I've been shopping with Greg. He was my first comic book store. And right after I got that Spider-Man 178 for my cousin, I went up to Dreamhaven, or I should say it wasn't Dreamhaven, it was Twin City Comics, not to be confused with the current Twin City Comics. Dale Front and Como, right in between my house and my cousin's house. And I think at the time, Amazing Spider-Man 180 was out. It was just the time when the third Green Goblin had showed up. And a lot of people, it was just a nice little store. It had, you know, back then there weren't, you know, 5,000 titles to be published, or at least it didn't seem like it. But yeah, I went in and I had gotten from my cousin, again, the Spider-Man, and he gave me three Fantastic Four comics. And although I've read Fantastic Four because he had tons of them, my cousin, I didn't want to collect it. So I brought those in and I asked him if he would buy them. And he bought them, three of them for me, for 20 cents a piece. And these were, I think they were around, they were between like 180 and 200. And I turned around and I bought some more Spider-Man, because at the time they were all 25 cents a piece. This is right when comics went from 25 to 30 cents. And I don't recall if I must have started going in every week, because I think he told me that new comics were every week. I don't recall when I got the idea that comics were every week. But I do recall different things, like, you know, I'd pick up like the Logan's Run reprint, and you know, they did issue 6, issue 7. And I was waiting for the next issue, and it never came out. And one day I walked in, and Greg's like, I just got a bunch of back issues in. I go, really? Did you get Logan's Run 8? And you can almost see the disappointment in his face as he was like, no. I do recall a copy of the Gold Key Yellow Submarine with poster. And I know I owned this copy later on because it had two double folds right across the corner. They were parallel in the upper right-hand cover, and I had a book like that years later that had to have been the one from his store that he was selling. For the princely sum of $30.
$30?
Crap, new comics for 30 cents. How could I afford that? I couldn't even get my mom to buy the first appearance of Spider-Man or Superman for $50. So Greg eventually closed his shop on Dale Front and Como and moved it to downtown Minneapolis and opened it up as a great title called The Complete Enchanter. And I figured out where it was. I got the address. And I talked to Pat, again, the same Pat I opened the comic store with later, because we were comic geeks. And, you know, I said, well, I know where the store is. We could take a bus and go to it. So we took the bus, and I got off the bus, and there was no comic store to be had. And we started walking, thinking, well, we'll walk back and forth. Maybe we'll find it. We're basically in the industrial area of Minneapolis. It's on Hennepin Avenue. And I forget what the number was, like 800. So we're walking. And then all of a sudden we notice, hey, the numbers are going up. We're like at 300 and it's going up. So we walked a mile. We finally got to where 800 was, and kind of walked back and forth and back and forth, and we couldn't figure out, where is it? Is it like hidden somewhere? So we got on a payphone. Again, this was years before cell phones. Called him up, and he said, oh, no, we're 800 West Hennepin, downtown. You must be 800 East. And I hung up.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, and we looked up, and there was downtown beckoning about 2 miles away. Bus came by, we hopped on it. 5 minutes later, we got off, and we went in. I think one of the first purchases I bought from him were Micronauts and Shogun 1. Remember when those ads came out for Marvel? They were both being purchased at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I just bought Micronauts. I never bought Shogun Warriors.
I bought both of them because, you know, back then I was pretty much the typical Marvel zombie. And the nice thing about it, the fun thing about it was, is, you know, we could go to the Complete Enchanter, then we could go down to Shinders on Block E, the big Shinders. And of course, on the other end of Shinders was the other Shinder brother. And I only went into his store once. You know, I'd spent like about an hour digging through the Shinder shop. And then I walked to the other one and went in, and right away he started yelling at me because I had a bag that said Shinders on it. And he was like, what are you doing? What are you looking for? Well, I'm going to look at comics. You can't leave here, but you can't come in here with that bag. And I'm like, well, you know, the funny thing is if your job when you're in business is to get money from people, I can honestly say to that bitter old bastard, I spent nothing in his store. I went to the other end of the block, and I think it was an X-Men 30, the one where Spider-Man was in it. I bought that instead. And that was like maybe $20 or something. It wasn't terribly expensive considering. So every Sunday or every Saturday, I would get up, hop the bus. It was two transfers to downtown Minneapolis, E Block. Now, E Block was very notorious. You know, this is where, you know, the hookers, the pimps, the drug people hung out. There was smut. There was, you know, all sorts of crap. So I'm sure my mom must have been pleased if she ever realized that I went down, you know, every Sunday to do that. Of course, I went in the morning. So there was probably nothing going on because everybody was probably hung over from the night's buzz. So it was basically Complete Enchanter, Shinders, McDonald's. And if I felt like it, I'd go down to the Minneapolis library and get some books. Take the bus home, come back. Eventually, a group bought that entire block. And I don't know who owned it. They basically kicked Greg out. And that's when I started going to St. Paul Comic on Ray Street. And the group that kicked out, and I don't know the religious group, but they set up something called the Masonic Temple. Eventually, it burned. The entire block burned.
Oh, jeez.
I know. It was just, and you know, I would walk by. I would still be going to Schindler's occasionally. But you'd walk by and the whole place was just gone. And you keep thinking, you know, maybe it was a good thing Greg was gone. I did not find Greg again until I found him. God, was I going to college then or not? He was in Dinkytown, Minnesota, right next to the University of Minnesota campus. He had a little, what could be termed as a small apartment on the second floor, filled with books and filled with comics. And that was the original Dream Haven, as I remember. And I remember just sitting on the ground and, you know, picking up stuff. I mean, John Sable Freelance had come out and he was selling him a cover price and it was a $5 back issue. Pat and I, in the meantime, had been doing, you know, the Weekend Warrior shows. Well, you know, I picked that up because I knew I'm buying it for $1.15. It's worth $5. I also picked up at that time Knights of the Dinner Table. And at one time I owned 1, 2, 4, and 6. And I think, Nick at the Post, at the Source, Nick Post at the Source bought them from me when I had Hot Comics. So, and he has offered to sell them back to me, but I'm like, you know, if I want them, I'll let you know. But I do have them in reprints and the online stuff. But eventually that store closed. And talking to Greg, he went over to, that's when he went over to England. I think this is where he started to become friends with all the authors and things. Because when he came back, he had his shop, Dreamhaven Books in Dinkytown. And it was along 4th Street, opposite of where the drugstore was. And he owned a little corner shop. And at that time, I also became friends with Al Payne. And I believe Al's still working in the comic business. I forget where he is now. I don't know if he's with IWA. He must be with IWA. IDW, sorry. Anyway, my brain's not thinking.
No, some damn comic company that puts out them funny books.
I'm just sitting here. I see the Love and Capes Ever After, and they did a 5-issue miniseries through IDW. That's how I caught myself on that one. Anyways, this was about the time when the Dark Knight hardcover came out, if you remember that, because that was as big a splash as the Dark Knight itself. And, of course, there were newsstand versions. There were direct sale versions, and there was, of course, I believe the $100 limited one.
Yep.
And
the way they did that, they announced the $100 limited one first, and they didn't announce that they were doing a hardcover, you know, regular trade hardcover and a paperback, because I remember reading in the Comic Buyer's Guide, I can't believe that they're only putting out a $100 limited edition through Graffiti Press, and that isn't fair, and we want to buy it. And then when they announced the hardcover, people were, oh, it's too expensive. And then the paperback, oh, we have to buy two of them because Warner's putting out one and DC's putting out one.
Yeah, had to have all the variants.
And, oh, you people. I'd love to just go back in time and go, look, here are all the hundreds of different versions you can buy of it. Shut up. Okay, go ahead.
What was great about Dreamhaven then is a lot of it was Al, because I would talk to Al. And I would go in and, you know, I was still buying books from St. Paul Comic, but, you know, I will say I was going to college at that time because you would get to the point where it's like, I had a hard day at college, new comic book days here. I'm going to get down to John's, but I want to buy my books now. So I'd buy, usually that's where I started buying duplicates. And I figured I'd just buy the ones that I knew I could sell later on. And, yeah, you'd come in, you talk to Al, pick up the stuff, and say, "Al, what's new? What do you recommend?" And he turned me on to a book called Tales of the Bean World, and I got issue number one. And it was just, that's just the way things were. You could always ask Al what was up. And eventually, they moved across the street, and I think that's where you might have seen it, right? Because they at one time they had the upper level and they had the lower level.
Yep, when I went there, they had just the upper level.
Okay. And eventually they took over the lower level, and it would be like comics and games downstairs, books and science fiction upstairs.
Yep.
And like you said, Corey, it doesn't matter how often you went there. You just look around and you would see something you've never seen before, and you're pretty damn sure it wasn't there the last time you were there, although Al or Greg would swear to death it was. And I would just keep going there. Eventually, while I was at college, I had my own radio show. I kind of marked it kind of on the edge of like Dr. Demento, where Dr. Demento would just play variant, you know, novelty songs and tell you about them. I would try to group them together in like 20 to 30 minute blocks and play it. So if I had a bunch of songs about dead animals, I would play 20 minutes of dead animals. I made a long repertoire of the end of the world, starting out with, you know, REM's End of the World as We Know It, and ending off with National Lampoon Radio Shows, you know, "Hi, my name's Owen. I'm the last man on earth," you know. And it was just fun. Dreamhaven Books sponsored it, which was cool. So I would run ads for Dreamhaven Books, and I would record everything on a cassette tape because, again, there were no iPods, no MP3 files. I'd bring them over to Greg, and they said they would play it in the store just as background music, which was fine if they did. If they didn't, it didn't matter. We also had a section in the store that was called Dreamhaven's Pick. And they would say that this was, you know, promoted on WDMR's Decadent File. That's what I named the show. And then I would also pimp the book on my show. And sometimes it was things like Sable, because the great or Mike Grell's book or comic book was turned into a short-lived ABC show. More often than not, it was just, you know, here are special things we have, you know, whatever. Greg, now these were paid spots, which is probably why I got to do the radio show, because I came in and I said, "I got this idea for a show. Yeah, yeah, that's nice. I have a sponsor lined up." "Oh, you do?" Everybody has a radio show, but to have sponsors. And then I think they also ran their ad other times during the week, but it was basically, this show was from Dreamhaven. So he sponsored my short-lived radio show. I got to the end of the quarter and I decided not to do it again. Part of it was because I didn't know if Greg wanted to sponsor it, but then he pulled me aside the next quarter and said, "Are you still doing that radio show?" I said, "No, I brought it to an end. I think I did what I wanted to." He said, "Oh, okay." So maybe I just misread. But I mean, you know, Greg, like you talked about the signings. I mean, I remember going to see the Dave Sim signing. And if you ever can find what Dave Sim did in your Cerebus book, I'd like you to scan it and put it online, because it was one of the funniest things I ever recall seeing. You know, I got the little head sketch. I brought in my Cerebus One, and he signed it. He goes, "Oh, wow, you got one." He goes, "Oh." I said, "I was so worried. I said, I bought this years ago, and I afraid I'd bring it in, and you'd go, it's the counterfeit." And he wrote on it to Joe, the owner, proud owner of an original Cerebus One. Sad to say, in a fit of commercialism, I ended up selling that somewhere along the line, and I've never seen it again. I figured it would be around somewhere. So if you've got it, give me a call. I want to buy it back. But anyways, Greg eventually closed the lower section of the Dreamhaven store in Dinkytown. And that's when he moved to the 1 million square foot warehouse near the uptown area in Minneapolis. And that's when he really, I mean, it was a superstore. You know, you'd walk in and go up the steps, and to the right side would be imported paperbacks. To the left would be all the magazines. You straight back, he had a very tastefully done, you know, adult section. Oodles of comics, oodles of back issues, almost anything new. He stocked things deep in terms of independent titles. If you ever were looking for a title, odds were good he had it. If he didn't have it, he could get it. Toys, used books. It was amazing. It was a thing to behold. And Corey covered what he said. You know, it just got to be too much. And he sold the building and his current location right there on 38th Avenue. Yeah, do you have the address?
I can get it.
Okay, we get it there. And you know, even the story open now is just—it's a small version of what he had. Not as many comics. A delightful store, and it's just—it's a shame he's got to do what he's got to do. But it's awesome that he's still going to be around to do it.
It is 2301 East 38th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we're going to be there.
Yep. For the final sale next week on the 28th. Actually, I think it's probably a party.
Yeah, it is. It's a big party with food and people and money changing hands as people go through and buy their last stuff. And I have heard that maybe there'll be music. Yeah. I don't think it'll be a banjo. I think it'll be like people setting up a guitar and blah, blah, blah. On their website is a list of books they have published.
I do recall Dreamhaven did have a Irish Wake for the First Amendment. This is back when the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund was started, and they had it was Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Adventures of Superman Annual. That's right, done by Jim Starlin. And I just said, put $100 on it for me, because I just stopped by, said my kudos, and I had to go to work. And get a call later from Al. Hey, you won. So, and then eventually I think I sold that to Big Mike from my store. So if I know, and I think he might have it, or he might have sold it. I don't know. If I wanted to keep it, I wouldn't have sold it.
Let's see. We've got a book by Peter Beagle, who's the guy who wrote The Last Unicorn, called Strange Roads, published by Dreamhaven Books. Got some Charles Vess work. And then again, a lot of Neil Gaiman. I would say just go to the Dreamhaven website, dreamhaven.com.
Dreamhavenbooks.com,
I'm sorry.
I'll put a link of it on our Facebook page for those of you who like to humor me in my Facebook fetish.
And it's got new books that are on sale, a lot of collectible books. Anything you'd ever want by Neil Gaiman. And like I said, Joe and I are going to go. Now, most comic shops, when they close up, it's more like you go there and the doors are shut and everything's gone and you didn't know they were gone. With Joe's shop, he sold it, so it didn't exactly close, but we had a big party for him when it closed. I think it's wonderful that Dreamhaven's doing the same thing. They're going to throw a big party for the store, kind of making this big shift to mostly mail order and appointments and author signings. So if you are in the Twin Cities area, you should go. I would say that if you're a science fiction book fan, you should go. Or you should at least just go to their website. Dreamhaven is one of the things I love about Minneapolis is we've got wonderful bookstores like Dreamhaven,
Uncle Hugo
and Uncle Edgar. I haven't had a chance to go there in a while, mostly because I'm buried under books right now and I'm running behind because on the overnight, we have to keep the lights very low so that the residents don't wake up. So it's kind of hard to read, which is why everything I'm reading is on the computer. And let's see, there's also Once Upon a Crime, which is a wonderful little mystery shop off Lindale. Just tons and tons of wonderful little things here in the Twin Cities. And lots of we still have more comic shops per capita than any city in the U.S. is what I've heard. Minnesota is known as a very literate city. I'm sorry, a literate state, with Minneapolis, St. Paul being very, very literate areas. We read a lot because it's so goddamn cold out.
True. Oh, by the way, just so you know, Greg's keeping regular store hours until January 28th. So if you want to get there beforehand, I'm pretty sure he's liquidating things. You want to go make a deal, he'll probably cut you a deal, because he wants to move as much as he can of the stuff he's not going to be mail ordering. So check it out.
And with that, Joe, do you have anything else?
No, I'm pretty much, I think we're caught up.
Well,
personally, everything's going great. Doesn't look like I'm going anywhere.
Oh.
So I'll hang around.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's just the way it is. I don't mind being home. I don't mind being on the road. It's all good.
I'm doing overnights, and I'm still adjusting to the sleep schedule. It's not pretty some days. Thursdays are the worst day because it's like, oh, 9 a.m. You know, that's the day where you do the 12-hour shift. And then you're off at 9 o'clock, and it's okay. Well, you get home, and, you know, you've been up all night. Do I go to sleep now, or do I force myself to stay awake so that I sleep at night? And lately, what I've been doing is I'll, like, sleep for 3 hours, get up and do stuff, and by about 3-4 in the afternoon, I'm so tired I can't do anything. So I go to take a nap, and no, I wake up around 9, and I'm up. So hopefully one of these job applications I've been sending out through the interwebs will get me a
I sent you a link to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. They were looking for a office manager.
Yeah, I'd have to move.
Oh, wow, wow, wow.
Oh, Joe, you want me to move away?
That's not like I see you.
You're that tired of me? You no. Don't want me around anymore?
You're not around now.
Well, there is that.
Say, when you were looking at Dreamhaven's website, did you see the quote by Harlan Ellison?
No.
It's right there. I'll read it to you. Let's see if I can get my Ellison throat going. The Tooth Fairy left the name Dreamhaven Books under my pillow. Usually it's a 25-cent piece, but given the current value of the U.S. dollar, the value of this tip was far more glorious. Dreamhaven is a book seeker's cave of miracles.
I remember one of the first times I went there looking for books, I asked about some Ellison books, and after I asked for two or three of them, they finally went, look, they're all out of print, and if the guy doesn't quit pissing off publishers, they're going to stay out of print.
And now you can go there, and he had a top shelf full of stuff.
Yep.
Because if he couldn't find it in the U.S., he would import it.
Yep. Now, we were going to talk about the squirt gun wars of the late 90s, but instead, we are bumping that to our next episode.
Yes.
So that'll be our tale from the shop next time. Actually, I hope to see some people at Dreamhaven. If we don't see you there, we'll cry.
Yes.
And I cry.
He does.
Openly. Usually when I'm watching like a
seeping wound.
Actually, it's more like when I'm watching some of the shows you talked about earlier. It's like, oh, God, I wasted my childhood on Lidsville. Although, since we're doing Sid and Marty Krofft, this will be really quick, Joe. You should tell the story of the Bugaloos.
Bugaloos?
Yes.
Ugh.
Where we were talking about the Bugaloos, and no one believed it was a real show.
No one believed anything. They didn't believe my Lidsville. They thought I was... Everybody remembers Puff and Stuff. The more enlightened remembers Sigmund and the Sea Monster. And then...
And Dr. Shrinker and
Nickelodeon ran...
Fantasy Hour, whatever that was.
Nickelodeon ran... What did they call it?
Puff-a-Puff? Croftapalooza.
And ironically enough, they didn't run episodes of The Lost Saucer. But they ran all these things. I caught them all in a half hour. I came in the shop with the tape. I said, you guys sit your ass down, watch this. Don't say a word and never, ever doubt me again.
And I had not seen Lidsville since it was on. I have deep, deep abiding love for Charles Nelson Reilly. That show hurt to watch. That was a painful, painful piece of shit.
Yeah, and Charles wasn't too fond of it either.
No. Of course, yeah, the shows look like they cost about $1.50. Well, we could go on blathering all day, but I think that we've spent an hour wasting your life as we talk about funny books and funny book shops. And we'd like to remind everybody that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.